Do you want bonus audio?
I think what we've done all day, by the way, guys, is yes and, yes and, yes and now we're just, why?
A cow's life begins, like many of us, as an egg. Squeezed out seemingly at random by the gentle grazer, the cow seems unbothered by its brown offspring.
I had the murder wall. I was trying to figure it out on my kitchen wall with names, post-its, string, and the lot.
Is that brother Pratt?
I don't know how to do things with my mind.
You've got to find a way to do this. I know it's inside you. You're a silver bow.
Come give it to me, buddy boy.
Okay.
And as he approaches me, I'd like to twist his nipples.
I can tell you for definite exactly where the inspiration for Nancy came from.
Go on.
Kethel just swallow it all.
Like a good boy. And
if he does get sliced by the glass, he'll just try and
start it out.
Like, yeah.
Well, join the Royal Britannia Patreon. Available now.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Royal Britannia Parlay. I'm Tom and I, of course, play Keth Rostein in Royal Britannia. As you know, in this series, we step away from our usual adventures and instead we talk to other podcasters, celebrities and members of the TTRPG community. Each episode we have a special guest, who could be a lifelong player, a fellow podcaster, a movie maker, or someone who has helped to shape Dungeons & Dragons into the game that we love today. In this episode, we were lucky enough to talk to an amazing builder of worlds. Not only are they an award-winning TTRPG creator, they're absolutely fascinating to listen to and bloody lovely to boot. It is, of course, Tim from Critical Kit.
Joining me now is James, the Dungeon Master, Alex, who plays Derek Normalbeard, Chip, who plays Jeff Silverbow, and Paul, who plays Maurus or Milo or whoever he wakes up as.
Whoever I feel like I am at the time.
Yes.
The important thing to remember is he will always have the same voice.
That's how you know it's him.
Yeah.
At risk of having...
character identity.
Terrible audio. Everyone talking over each other. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. I'm so glad to be here again. It's really nice.
Yeah, this is... everybody's been really nice. this is my first parlay as a married man in a new house. So
this is very, very true.
Yeah.
You sound a bit different.
Actual office.
Yeah. I'm in an actual office now.
Not like balanced on the end of his bed or in a dining room.
Yeah, that's what it was before.
Hi, Tom.
Hello, mate.
I didn't want to talk over everyone, sorry.
Oh,
so I waited.
You should have said something. I didn't know you were here.
There's a really long delay in Chip's house.
That's right. I'll go over and shove internet in.
Oh. Now, we first met Tim at UKGE, but the first time I really got to speak to him was at MCM Comic Con in London. And as I came around the corner to chat to him, he was really excited as he was holding an enormous D20, which is actually full of normal D20s that had just been signed by Critical Role.
Hell yeah.
Now, James, you leapt into the hot seat here for this interview.
Now, I can see the script here.
I can see the script as well.
I believe you've skipped something there.
Yeah, I have.
Shall we rewind that back and just make sure we're okay. covering all the words in that script?
I will read the script verbatim.
Thank you.
Well, with all that out of the way...
Oh, how rude.
Now, James, you very, very well-endowed man in a microscope.
Oh,
you leapt into the hot seat here. So how was your chat with Sir Tim?
It was very lovely.
It wasn't he just?
But, he's a fascinating man.
Mm.
And I was very... I was perched in the Toscobble kitchen.
You were, yes.
Perched?
I was.
How high is it?
I was perched. It's very high up. For a combination of reasons that we'd just come back from recording a thing and I hadn't put my room back together.
Yes.
So it was all still in the boot of my car. And I thought, oh, that's annoying. Never mind. I'll just drive home on my lunch break to set it up so we can do the recording. And then I realised not only was that a problem because my car was also blocked in the car park. So I couldn't take the car home to go to the studio where I needed to record the thing. So we went to Toscobble Manor.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating.
It was a beautiful day.
It was a lovely day. We had a great time.
And then it rained.
Oh, well, it is England.
It did rain on the way back. You're correct.
Well.
You know, it's really interesting that you asked me about it. Sorry.
Anyway, with all that out of the way, I think it's time to push the play button and enjoy James's lovely chat with the creator of Critical Kit. Play.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us for this episode, a very special episode of Roll Britannia Parlay, where this time I'm lucky enough to talk to an amazing creator from the industry of TTRPG, a producer of games and seller of all things exciting to do with TTRPGs. It's Tim from Critical Kit. Tim, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, busy but good busy. I think that's the easy answer.
Well, that's the best way to be, is be busy.
Absolutely. Always got time for you guys, though.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I think the last time I saw you, your face in, and it was in 3D as well. I saw you at Comic-Con, I think, in December.
Yeah, that was a wild one. That was MCM Birmingham, which I did half of it, flew down to London to do Dragon Meat for a day, and then came back up again. When I say flew down, I mean I flew down in a van.
Oh, that was me. I was thinking the chopper was coming in, and
no. I'm not quite there yet. No. And it wasn't a van with wings either. I literally had to get in the van on the. I think it was the. I did the Friday morning. Friday night, I set off down to London. Did Saturday in London, and then Saturday night drove back up to Birmingham to do the Sunday. So I was I was absolutely trashed.
Yeah, I bet. After that. Cream crackered, as they say. Oh, that's cool. So I think from my point of view, I think it'd be, you know, we know quite a bit about you now, because I think we've seen you at the last few shows that we've been at, and you know, Paul here has been chatting you up and all sorts that whole time.
He's very good.
I think it's fair to you know, ask you to just tell us a little bit about where Critical Kit started and what, you know, how you came into this, the world that is TTRPGs, you know, where did it all begin?
All right. So on a cold winter's morning in 1970, no, I'm not going to give away my age. So in the sort of 1980s, I was, at school, I was really into the fighting fantasy books. Those were my gateway. And what's really strange, what I've thought about since, considering the industry I'm in now, is I used to get the Citadel miniatures, the little lead miniature catalogs, and I used to take them to school and hawk them to all the kids and put about 25p or whatever on a miniature and then sell them. And it's only something I thought about a few weeks ago. I thought, I used to do this when I was a kid, what I'm doing now. I played D&D with my maths teacher during the 80s. He set up a little group, so that was really cool. It was Red Box. Role-playing wasn't the same back then as it was now. It was literally getting in there, smashing things up, killing things, and seeing how much loot you got. So I do love the way, you know, the way role-playing has developed to become quite a key part of RPGs. I went off and did a lot of adulting. And then about probably 10 years ago, I got back into playing RPGs. Fifth edition was definitely a big, you know, a big driver of that. It was it was nice. I think I saw it in a comic book store or something, because I was always into comics, but I saw this box set for the start set, and I'm like, oh, I remember that. I'll give it a go. And that was where that journey started. Up until about 5 years ago, I was a software developer. So that was what I was doing. And I decided that I was going to try and get a little side gig going, selling some dice. So I bought some dice, put them up, and that's pretty much the rest is history, really. It's, 5 years on, it's a full-time job for me. It's a full-time job for my wife. And we're taking someone else on this summer. So it's ridiculous.
It's growing from strength to strength then, you know. It's, I love the identity of it. It's to be, you know, you guys are always so friendly and, really outgoing when we come and see you at the stands. So it's been, it's a real pleasure to sort of meet you, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's good to meet you guys. And we do try and get out there, because, you know, it started off as an e-commerce business, but we've always tried to just get out there as much as we can in front of the audience and chat to people, because there's nothing more I love than talking about the games to people, you know. And it's just great to actually meet the people that play in the games and the people that just buy the games and put them on the shelves. There's plenty of those as well. So I get a lot of, oh, I bought your game, but I haven't played it yet.
Well, that brings me quite neatly on to, I guess, the next part of what I wanted to talk to you about, which is, obviously, you don't just sell, accessories and games, you actually make them as well. And I guess, you know, I wanted a little bit about how you came to make your first game, what it was and how it's how it came together, and, you know, what that looks like.
It's a peculiar story, but I think all creative ventures start with a peculiar story. Since I was 20, I've always been into writing fiction. Fiction's always been a big thing outside of fantasy. I'm gonna say something now that I'm probably gonna regret, but I'm not a big reader of high fantasy. So I've read Lord of the Rings, and that's pretty much it. I don't really read fantasy novels, which is really strange. And that might actually help me a little bit with, you know, the kind of games I produce. I started writing a lot of, once Critical Kid become established, I thought, why don't I take some of the my fiction writing skills into trying to actually write some D&D stuff. So I did a lot of one shots. I think my biggest to date is Macbeth, and not because it's free. It didn't used to be free. It was still my biggest one, but we put it live for Free RPG Day about 2 years ago, and I forgot to take it off, like, free. So we just continuously keep it all there free. So that's like a murder mystery in the Feywild. So I started trying to write different things, you know, things that weren't, just something a bit quirky, but not just quirky for quirky's sake. So I definitely came into it through writing D&D stuff. And then I decided I wanted to write an RPG. I got this thing in my head that I have to write an RPG. And then I thought, no, that's a really big undertaking. So then I thought, why don't I try write a solo RPG? And it's funny, actually, about, I think it was 3 years ago, maybe, no, 4 years ago at UKG, we were opposite Colossal. So I don't know whether you know Nick from Colossal. So I had a good chat to Nick, and, I learned a few things about how solo RPGs work. Definitely that they weren't what I remember them as, turn to page 240 if you want to go left, or...
Oh, no, it's an ogre. Right, you know.
So
the Yeti gets you.
They've become more nuanced, you know, the more role-playing has become more of an imaginative pursuit, you know, a creative pursuit. And I suppose from there I started thinking about, well, maybe I could do a solo, maybe that'd be a bit simpler. And I started doing one which was a Western. And this is really where fate comes in. I was doom-scrolling on Instagram and I saw the old Be Like a Crow meme.
Yep.
So I saw the meme that said, you know, hop, like, shout when you see your friends, collect shiny things and all that. And I've always loved crows as well. And I thought, you know, why don't I do a game about a crow? So I wrote out 2 pages of a game, like, just with some prompts. And it was the most simple game. And someone said to me, why don't you put it on Kickstarter? I put it on Kickstarter. You know, I did a few mock-ups of the book, put it on Kickstarter. And we raised £68,000, which meant,
wow.
Not only did I have to write it, I thought, well, hang on a minute, I'll give everybody something a lot more than just my 2-page zine. And that's basically the story of my first role-playing game. And that was my, you know, that was my introduction to writing role-playing games. Well, last year it picked up UKG's RPG of the Year, which was just like,
I know,
ridiculous. The first game, the first solo game, and it was like, you know, I was constantly thinking something's going to go wrong here. Someone's, you know, you talk about imposter syndrome. I thought someone's going to point at me and, at some point and go, ah, no, hang on a minute.
I have to say that was our prize or, that was our first year at UKG, and honestly, you couldn't move for people wearing your stickers and badges and everything there. Like, everyone that came past was wearing something that said, be like a crow.
We were on the campaign trail. We were on the campaign trail.
I mean, it definitely worked.
It was a lovely UKG. And just to let everybody know how much it changed my life, about 20 minutes after I won that award, I had my high-vis jacket on and I was going to collect the van to start loading it all back up with all the stuff we bring to the convention. So it might look glamorous from, you know, this side, or when you're buying the books, it might look like a great career, but we, you know, we still got to trail around the conventions and do all the hard work as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hard work is where it's definitely something that I think people don't realize how much work goes into those sorts of conventions and stuff. And certainly it seems, you know, I mean, how long did it take you to you know, create Be Like Crow?
Be Like a Crow, probably a solid work probably took about, if I did it all, it took about 6 months. So I think it took about a year to produce, but it took me about 6 months. Yeah. So, and I can generally, for a smaller game, that is generally now my working time. I know what I can produce in about 6 months. But I've also got a very strange way of writing, insofar as that I will write a project, and rather than procrastinate, because procrastinating is the easiest thing to do, I'll move on to writing something else. So if I'm not feeling it, I'll write something else, which is kind of a gift to my future self. So yeah. There's always, right now at this point, I've got two more games that are sat half finished while I'm working on a game currently. So ultimately, at some point in the future, those will all come to fruition.
Oh, nice. So you mentioned that, you know, a crow meme was your inspiration for Be Like a Crow. I mean, I'm guessing that not all your game inspiration comes from memes on Instagram. You know, what do you use for that inspiration?
I don't know. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Writing's a weird thing insofar as I always go back to what Neil Gaiman says about writing. And that's that, you know, writers aren't necessarily don't have any more ideas than anyone else. What they are good is at noticing when they've had an idea. And, you know, I think that's really true. It's everything is grist of the mill for me. I often say to people when I'm in a conversation with them and I start asking them questions, I say, just be aware that some of what you're telling me now might appear in a story or a game or something. So I do always prefix it with that. So yeah, my latest game, Punk is Dead. There were two things. I wanted to write a game. I wanted to write a musical RPG. I wanted to do something about songwriting, because a lot of the RPGs I've done to date have always got another aspect of creativity in. So Be Like a Crow is creative writing with rules. D666 is dungeon building with rules. Be Like a Cat's creative writing with rules, and a bit of dungeon building with it. Well, world building with rules.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know, I want to cover all the bases. I'm going to do a musical one. And despite me being a little bit too young for the punk scene, only by a few years, it was a really big sort of in forming my musical taste. Punk was a really big thing. I had some friends that were a bit older than me, so they used to, like, you know, give me cassettes of things like Crass and The Clash and it's the Sex Pistols, etc. And I, you know, it really did inform my musical taste. So I was always really into that scene, but from kind of as a more of a spectator.
So you never had the mohawk then?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I never had the mohawk. No, worse than that, I had really long hair when I was a kid. It was horrific. I think at the bottom of the back of kit page there is an old photograph of me at a rave. It's not a good photograph. So I kind of wanted to write a game about songwriting, and then about 3 years ago I really got into Merkborg, and I was just like, wow, this is a really cool game, and you know, I just love the aesthetic of it. And I think probably about 7 or 8 months ago I was thinking about The Punk is Dead, and then I thought, oh, I'm going to write a Merkborg. And then all of a sudden it's that confluence of ideas. It was just like, oh, hang on a minute. Would it work? Could I do this? And yeah, I just thought, well, you know, if Merkborg's death metal, then Punk is Dead is going to be the punk version of Merkborg. I figured I could get the aesthetic. So I'd say the game is Merkborg in spirit. It's Merkborg in the foundation of the rules, but I also want to make it its own thing.
Yeah.
In several ways. I've got ideas for doing that.
It looks incredible. I mean, the aesthetic and all the artwork that I've seen looks spot on.
Yeah.
I think a few extra safety pins here or there is part of the design, I think. Yeah, are they going to be weapons, giant safety pins? I don't know.
Yeah, there are going to be a lot of, well, I mean, you know, there's going to be the guitar, which is the, you know, the metaphorical axe. So we're going to have that in there. But yeah, there are so many nods to punk, you know, nods to punk. And I'm kind of hybriding it between a fantasy game and a real world game because it takes place, as you've seen, in the Ununited Kingdom.
Yep.
So it does actually take place. I pulled it back into a real world, but then I've injected fantasy into the Ununited Kingdom. So it's I'm trying to give players, you know, the means to actually play in their world, but also bring in elements of fantasy if they want. So you can tailor it to how much hardcore realism you want, or how much, you know, whimsical fantasy you want.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that you've put another game together that is so different from everything else you've created, and, you know, it leads me onto so many, like, I'm trying to pick your brain here, if anything else, because I have to say, before I go further, I have to say massive congratulations on absolutely cruising through your backer kit target for the Punk is Dead.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, it's incredible. I think, you know, if you have any advice for how to set up a successful backer kit, I mean, I'd be happy to hear it. But
I think the first thing is, you know, don't do it for the money, which sounds really weird because really we need the money from backer kit because, you know, it's what helps me carry on writing. But ultimately, always have it at the back of the mind that I think, so again, coming back to another writer, Stephen King said, write the thing that you want to see in the world, because you'd be surprised at how many people there are like you in the world. You know, there's going on near 8 billion people on the planet. So no matter how crazy your idea is, there's going to be someone out there for it. I suppose the difficulty comes in finding the market, you know, finding those people.
Yeah.
Backer kit, Kickstarter, these are great ways to do it. They're great ways to raise money. I'm also going to get... I wouldn't say political here, but I'm going to get into the realm of you're also avoiding banks if you're a small business, you know, because you are actually going straight to your community. And that would bring me on to the point, build up a community. That's probably going to be your first thing, because I guess one of the reasons that Punk is Dead cruised through to an extent was because of Be Like a Crow and, you know, the other games I produced. But we're also getting... people are into punk music that have never played role-playing games, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we're also getting people that play RPGs that are thinking, oh, do you know what? I'd like a go at making some music, or, you know, people are quite adventurous in the RPG space, right? It's what they want us. D&D is a great gateway, but people are definitely hungry for other things. So I think that's where, I think that's the niche I'm trying to appeal to. So yeah, but build up a community and create something that you're passionate about. I think those are the two biggest pieces of advice. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I think when it comes to building a game, you've obviously absolutely nailed that, and you've found the way to reach the people. You've got an amazing community around the products you make and the store, and you in general, I think, is I think you've definitely got a bit of a cult following with the products you produce. From a technical point of view, if you were giving some advice to someone about who wanted to make their own game, I think there's a couple of questions that I'd love to, you know, hear your thoughts on. I think one is, obviously, one way of doing it is taking something like the OGL content that you can use from 5th edition and building a game around that. And I know you've done that, but in terms of building your own mechanics for a game, you know, you've been down that road. You've worked. You know, you've created a game that works the way you want it to. You know, how do you go about building a game from literally scratch to having a functional, playable game that has mechanics that make sense? You know, how many tests are involved in that? You know, what's the process?
Yeah, so it's it's about iteration. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work. And play, like you said, playtesting is a huge part of that. But outside of playtesting, so, you know, obviously get as many people as you can together, get it out early, get your initial ideas out. But going right back to the start, when you just had the seed for an idea, start thinking about it thematically. So, you know, think about, is there a certain type of thing that would lend itself to, you know, dice rolls? Does it need complex dice rolls? Always look at other systems first, because, you know, there's no point in reinventing the wheel if there's something that's going to work and matches what you're doing. But if you are a sucker for punishment and you want to create your own mechanics, then I would say start off with something simple like D6s or a deck of cards or something, or a Jenga tower, just something that brings an element of luck and an element of skill. So your element of skill would generally be your stats and making measured decisions. And then your element of luck would be, you know, the rolls or pulling something out of the Jenga tower. So look at things. Don't just go for something because it feels quirky or different. You know, go for something that feels right for you. Get a friend that's good at maths, that understands like bell curves and things and you know, all that kind of stuff. Because I'm going to hold my hands up. I got a C in maths at GCSE. It was the only GCSE I got. So that is just wild. I generally send my stuff to someone who's good at maths, or there's like dice rolling things online that you can, you know, any dice that you can sort of test sort of curves on and etc. And you can get really, really deep into it yourself if you want. And then what else would I say about developing mechanics? I'd just say just test. And if anything feels overpowered, but I'd always say start simple. I'd always say start simple, few skills, because you know, people will tell you, they'll play it, they'll be honest with you, and they'll tell you when they think something's not right, even if it goes in their benefit. Just get it out to people to test. Solo games are a bit easy to play test because you can do a lot of the legwork initially yourself before you send it out. So you can get quite a long way with a finished product before you send it out and say, you know, please take a look at this, see if it's any good. But you've also got your own biases. So there is a point when you have to release it to someone. Whereas when you're developing a multiplayer game, well, it's harder for you to be different people at the table. So it's always great to have some player testing done.
Yeah. So you take, you know, you created Be Like a Crow, start ground up, and you took that to the UKG Awards. You know, what was the process like for you in terms of, you know, when you had it submit, were you confident in it? Were you ready? Or did you think, let's just do it? What was that like for you?
That's Sarah, which is, I mean, as you probably know, like I would literally do nothing but write and not do any of the promotional stuff if it wasn't for Sarah. Mm. So that's my wife. You've met her. You know, she probably arranged this for me to come to this podcast. And it's not that I don't have a willingness to do it. It's just that I just don't think of all these things because I literally have my head in the clouds most of the time. So she submitted it to a guy called John Dodd. So he came to see us at Aircon. He reminded us that we could submit games. She submitted it to John Dodd, who I think he does do some UKG stuff, but he does Dragon Me, right? He's the main guy at Dragon Me.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was taking the RPGs, and here's the weird thing about it: I never got officially told by UKG that I was even nominated. So it was the guys from Parable Games that sent a tweet to me saying congratulations, and I'm like, all right, okay, we've been nominated for UKG's Role Playing Game of the Year award. And again, no one from UKG contacts me. This is nothing against UKG. I love UKG, and it's a great thing. Apart from 10 minutes before the awards were due to be announced, a guy with a UKG t-shirt came running around and said, you need to get to the awards ceremony now because they're going to announce like that. Sarah was like, oh my God, we've done it. And I was still in the sort of, you know, well, no, they just want everybody that's nominated down there. So I was still in the real, when I say I was really shocked that I got that award, I was still in that. if you watch it, there's a video of it somewhere. If you watch it back, there's a pause before I even walk up to get the award. I'm like Rich from Hatchling Games had come to like, you know, be there with us as well and support us. And he kind of did say, that's you. Do you know, they've just read you, because I wasn't really processing everything. And I think I had the most ridiculous smile on my face when I walked up, because even the guy that runs the AKG just said, you know, oh, look at this guy's smile or something. And it was just like, yeah, I think it was just a great moment. I really enjoyed it. And I made sure that after we got the award, I went round and took photographs with all the indie creators and shared them all. And so we did a whole host of like, I don't know, just post to say these people also make independent games. These people also make independent games, because the award was for the game and not for me. That sounds really strange, but I've had my joy out of the game. I had my joy in creating the game, and I'm not being disingenuous when I say that. It was a really nice moment, but when that moment's passed, it's gone. You know, the award's won, it's gone. What the award did was straight away we got retailers calling us saying, can we stock your game? So that's what that journey looks like. So it's, you know, I would say to anybody writing a game, stick it in for the awards. Don't be like me, okay?
be like
Sarah.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, that's incredible. You obviously, you wrote Be Like a Crow. You've got Be Like a Cat on pre-order now. Is that right?
Yeah, so Be Like a Cat is actually, we can't say, so it's into us next week. We can't send that out until, we can't probably sell that until April, because we're fulfilling it in March. So obviously until the backers have got it. I've got another game, which is a really, I think it's niche, but it sells really well. D666. It really does. Yeah. It's found its market. It really has, because it's, I'm always like, do we take D666 with us? Do we? Yeah. And then we take it to a convention, it sells out. And I kind of forget about it, because, you know, people always want to talk about the Crow game or what I've got going on. And I always forget, like, and for me, even D666 is, you know, it's a funny one.
Yeah. Well, you've got amazing, you know, you've got a huge range of games and stuff set up. It's, it was White Sands, Death Valley, is that right?
I think I got 5 games. Death Valley is a starter set for something bigger that's coming. So that's
exciting.
I've got a bigger version of that coming.
That leads me on to my question then, is that, obviously, we can see some of the, you know, the projects you've got working on. You've alluded to a couple of games you've got in the background. What is the what's the future look like for someone's at the door. What does the future look like for Critical Kit then?
So the next big project I'm working on after Punk is Dead is going to be Corvus.
Mm-hmm.
So Corvus is the one that I think a lot of people who know will be happy about. It's the multiplayer version of Be Like a Crow. It's pretty much since day one when Be Like a Crow went out there, people were saying, you know, like the community was saying, when's the multiplayer version coming? And I've kept teasing releases of new games, and every time it's been a different game. So I've got to be ready to write something. I've got to want to write it. You know, Punk is Dead was what I wanted to write at the moment. Corvus is coming in June. I've already started making the notes. I'm happy with the rule system. We're going to go with Year Zero engine, tweaked a bit because it fits well with one of the main things I wanted to do with Corvus is you can take your character from the solo game and bring it into the multiplayer game and vice versa, which is gonna bring a different. I'm always trying to find what we can do with role playing games, and it kind of means that you can. A, you could play solo for a while and join a game with your character. But B, if you can't make a session, say Wednesday, you say, I can't make Wednesday's session, I'm free on Thursday. Well, either the GM could say to you, well, I'll run you the solo, or you could say, I'll run the solo if they trust you. I'll go off and try and find an object we need, or go meet a person we need to meet and get some information off. So it gives you that opportunity to play in a different way.
Yeah.
But that's the next thing. I have got a game called Deadly Nightshade, which is I'm not going to tell you anything about, because I don't think anybody's done it, and I'm so uptight about people doing it before I do it. So that's all it's called. It does involve a bit of regicide, which is nice. So there's a little clue, yeah. And then I've got probably the next thing I want to work on might be late 2024, early 2025, is Death Valley, which is the horror western where you are the undead. So I've run that so many times at conventions now. You know, the Sundays are quieter. Sarah started booking me in to actually run it.
Yeah.
So I've started running games now. And everybody just has such a blast with that, you know. It's such a load of fun. So I can't wait to build the lore out. I can't wait to, I mean, it's got Tibetan mythology in it. It's a Western. It's absolutely wild and a hell of a lot of fun. And it's all about the, even though it's a horror, it's all about the fun at the table. It's not, you can go as gory as you want, but it really is about the puns and the ridiculous moments.
I love it. Awesome. So I think you know, well, I'll ask you one last question then, because you've given me some amazing like insights into the world of game making and, you know, how your business got started, what you're looking for. So I think this is something I like to ask everyone that comes on the show is, if you had some advice for someone looking to get into making games or getting into the world of TTRPG in general, you know, what advice would you want to give someone that you wish you'd had when you started?
I would say two pieces of advice. The first one is write, and it's simple. It's one word: write. Do it anytime you can. If even if you're struggling and you feel like you got writer's block, just keep going, push on, because you know that's your block of clay. If you're a sculptor or something, they, you know, it doesn't matter how bad it is. You're not showing it to anyone. And I guess, what would the second piece of advice with? It's actually slipped my mind, and it was a really good piece of advice. yeah, it would be to write. Oh yeah, and embrace failure. Failing is part of creativity, you know, and so that kind of ties into the writing, you know, things that you don't like. You've got proofreaders. I've got several really successful games out at the moment, and I'm not afraid to tell people that the last game I wrote, Be Like a Cat, came back with 500 changes from the proofreader.
Wow.
So what I'm going to say, and I consider myself a writer, so proofreaders are good at their job, I'm good at my job, you know, and that's making the piece of clay, and that's getting it as near as I can get it before I have to take it to someone, you know, that needs to. But just write, and don't be, you know, embrace failure, because failing is how your work evolves.
That's some great advice. That's absolutely amazing. So thank you so, so much, Tim, for sharing some time with us. So our listeners know, where can we find, you know, start your products, your services, and when can we see you next as well?
Yeah, okay. So you can go to criticalkit.co.uk, or you can just search for Critical Kit online. We generally come up somewhere near the top, although I have recently found out it's also a name of preppers. They have like Critical Kit is what preppers get, so yeah, so we, you know, if it's a store you find that's selling like loads of rations and things, that's not us. Look for Dice and Games. I'm traveling out to the States on next Friday to do Gamma, the game manufacturers thing, so if you're in the industry, you can meet me there in Louisville, Kentucky. And then I'm back out 9 days after I return, I'm back out to Boston for PAX East. And then I get April off, and then you can see me at May. You can see me at, I think it's MCM, right? Is it London MCM in May?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll also be at UKG, which I believe is at the end of May. And
right at the end of May, yeah.
Start of June. And if you really do want to come and see some of our products, while I'm at PAX East, I've just realized we managed to double book MegaCon in Birmingham, so we're going to get someone else. So I won't be there, but there will be someone at MegaCon on our behalf, because we're going to have to get some gear up there now and some people to work on the stand. So that's where I'm going to be in the next 2 to 3 months.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Tim. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And for everyone listening, please do go to the website and find lots of exciting things. Try out the games. And yeah, definitely do. And yeah, try. Definitely do Be Like a Crow, because I think we would check that out at UKGE, and I think I love the idea of being able to do a single player and morphing it into that multiplayer version of the game. I'm really excited about. So yeah, Check that out. Check out all the products, and thank you again, Tim, from Critical you. Kit.
Yeah, cheers. Bye.
Where to start? I really, really enjoyed that. I'd love to have a peek inside Tim's mind. There is a huge amount going on. He's got so much good advice, and all I really want to do is play Be Like a Cat. But what did you four take away from that? Don't all jump at once.
You told us not to talk over ourselves.
I thought we were going in the order.
We can't just give us one instruction at the beginning of the episode and then tell us to try and not do it afterwards. Yeah, just give us one clear instruction, Tom. We're trying to do what you want and tell you how amazing we found this interview. And then you haven't given us any time.
I'm amazed by how long they're going to
follow through with this. I don't know if you'll ever be able to isolate any of this audio, but it's just going to end up just being something that's just lost to us.
Well, do you know what? They're all really valid points. Very, very valid points. But just in case nobody
did you hear all of that, who wants to go first? That was actually... We need to leave that in.
I'm totally leaving it in. And I'm going to dissect each single one. James, what did you think?
I mean, just... His insights into the world of writing and the way he comes up with games is just mind-blowing. Mm. Like, it's almost sort of starting... it's not quite starting with the laugh and working backwards to the joke, but it's kind of just going, oh, what if that can be a game? And then just working backwards from an idea. So rather than starting with a mechanic and all these things, it's actually just, I want it to be this, and then doing it. Which is so cool.
I thought it was really...
It's like a puzzle maker, isn't he?
Yeah.
But he's almost like a puzzle maker that's making the puzzle pieces and going, I've made this cool puzzle piece. Does it fit anywhere? Not yet. Okay, I'll leave that puzzle piece. I'm going to make another puzzle piece because I've got an idea. And he makes another puzzle piece. Oh, those fit together. Cool, that's now part of a thing. Or if it doesn't fit, he goes, cool, now I've got two different puzzles that I've started.
It really stuck when he said...
Interesting concept of creation rather than just going, I've got an idea, see it through to the end. Just, nah, where the creativity flow takes you.
Yeah.
It's cool, right?
Don't procrastinate. If it's not working, go and work on something else. I thought that was very, very, very smart.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a technique that I do as well, that I think is really, really cool, especially when you're making games that are... I mean, his creative output is so varied. Death Valley and D666 and Like a Crow couldn't be more different from each other as games. Punk is Dead, right? But he's able to kind of have all of these brainwaves of like little different mechanics and different styles of gameplay, like being like a crow using a deck of cards. I'm also really excited for the fact that it'll be a multiplayer game. And James was saying,
we need to play test it.
Oh, yeah. That's incredible though, right?
Like James was saying before we started this recording, you can continue the story solo and then join up together, and that's just awesome.
I mean, that's cool. That's a Dungeon Master's dream.
Yeah, oh god, yeah. Yeah, really, really cool idea.
All of a sudden, you've got players, oh, I can't make it this week. It doesn't work for us because that's not how we do things. But if you're doing your weekly games and you're trying to tell a story and one of your players is like, oh, actually, I've got a family thing, or I'm not feeling well, or any of these things, you can continue the story and they can do their own thing in the interim time as a single player and then join back up. Yeah. Or if they say, I'm going away for 2 weeks, you can be like, cool, it's not a problem. I really like the fact that it's like this plug and play kind of thing where you've got like this one overarching game in the form of Corvus, but the players can go off and kind of not be excluded. I really like
it.
If there was a way to do that in D&D, it would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think there are some solo D&D things, but I think the way that he's made the simplicity is really, really cool with the way that he makes his games, I think he's a genius.
I find it really quite entertaining though that he said in the interview, he was there going, from literally like after the first month I released Be Like a Crow, people going, where's the multiplayer? And he went, yeah, I'll get there. And it was sort of like, he was like, I'm gonna do it. I know people want it. I know I've got something good here and everyone wants to play together. You'll get it when I'm ready. I've got other things in my head I want to do first,
and also I keep wanting more kind of thing.
It's a great one marketing strategy, but also it is the way his creativity works. It's brilliant to be able to go, yeah, I've hit gold, and I'll go back to that vein in a minute and keep digging. But I've got other things I want to explore first. It's really cool.
I think one of the other interesting aspects about he was saying that the way that he makes games is that he gets somebody to test the maths of it as well to make
the bell curve,
like it works, the bell curve, and like it works on a larger scale or over time, which I think is a really interesting strategy that I'd not thought of before, or like an aspect of game making that I'd not thought of. Because obviously, if you're playing it, you can only play test yourself so much, right? Yeah. Or with people, friends, stuff so much. So to see the actual, like, you know, algorithmic data of it, I think is really, really interesting. And it just shows how much he cares about making solid, replayable games for a lot of people. Yeah, I think he's awesome. And by the way, just, I think him and Sarah make a fantastic team. They are both lovely. And they've had loads of success, and it's like no wonder why.
Mm. I'm really not surprised. I mean, Paul, you were like, you were the first person, I think, in the group to actually like meet them.
Mm. Yeah, was yeah.
It, I don't know. No, Paul. All thanks to Paul. Yeah.
Networking, you came back Paul. From meeting them covered in Be Like Crow merch.
Yes, yeah, I was absolutely covered in Be Like a Crow stickers at UKGE.
So was everybody else as well.
Yeah. You were, though. Yeah.
And I don't know whether if you guys are aware, but he's also written a horror setting called Crowthulu.
Yes, I saw
Western
that on the website.
Called A Fistful of Feathers.
Yeah.
Nice.
I saw that on the website. That's so good.
So I'd be quite interested in playing those as well.
That comes on actually. Cool. Calling my words out. So, of all of his games, which one would each of you want to play the most? I'll start with you, Alex.
Death Valley.
Death Valley for you.
Death Valley, for those of you that don't know, is a Western, like horror kind of Western, but where you play as the undead and the enemies are the humans trying to kill you. And I think that's such a cool concept. I think it's so funny. It's such a, like, again, it's one of these, like, why hasn't it been thought of before? Because it takes one guy to just, like, have this little brainwave and really crystallize this really cool concept. And I think we'd have an absolute blast doing it.
Okay. Like it. Paul?
I've got to say the same, Death Valley. But I would also really like to play Be Like a Crow and Corvus when it's out.
Yeah.
Like it.
I agree.
Chipsky.
Well, you know me and the fact that I like a good sing song. So the idea of there being a musical TTRPG really speaks to me. So I would love the idea of playing Punk is Dead. I have no other basis other than hearing it's a musical TTRPG. That it on its own has gone, yeah, I want to play this game.
you barred you.
You know, literally, it could say, and I think there'd be a number of us that would have great fun. Some of us who would have a lot less fun, but would definitely be happy to go along with the band.
Well, we could be Monstrous Sex Ghost on tour.
Yeah.
Which would be awesome.
Okay, we need
So there we go.
James,
so
if you could arrange that, that would be marvellous.
I love the fact, even though it's managed to get it's still in the minority voting of the three of us that have voted so far, it's still already got a pitch. It's that good.
that good. Brilliant.
What about you, James?
I have to say, I think Punk is Dead really stands out to me as a game idea. You know, I know it's still very early on for that, but I think it's just such a cool concept. Mm. That being said, I mean, I do agree. I think the Death Valley thing is sick.
But
we absolutely have to play Be Like Crow and Corvus, but I think there's something instinctively like exciting about the idea of Punk is Dead that really for some reason just appeals to
it's
me.
So different,
yeah, I think
isn't
we
it?
Would do really well as a punk band. we
have to do as much as Sex Ghost.
I'm
afraid it's
we've already got
to.
The logo.
Yeah, we do,
and we're obviously going to come as like have like five different genres in one band. It's going to end up being some
Maxi
sort
saxophone
of, like,
can I suggest though for when we do live performances that we just go with a simple costume of sheets with holes cut in them. And literally just go with every single one of us just has a white sheet with holes cut
three
in
holes.
It.
Three holes.
Yeah, three holes. For those of
but
us.
Not what you'd expect.
Not what you'd expect. They're all at the back.
All of, one on
the
every anus. Single one of us gets to choose a different third hole location.
That's why this.
Third hole location is quite a good.
That's a good name.
It's a good cover band name.
I would like to have featuring a go. Be Like a Cat. Thing. That just because I like cats.
Be Like a Cat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm definitely
right. You know, something about. Yeah. I really
why?
Thought you were going to go for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I was very, very tempted with
I
Death
think
Valley.
What we're saying, I think what we're saying is we're going to end up playing all of the Critical Kit games.
Yeah, at some stage.
Pretty
much.
At some stage, yeah.
But
it's
like
you're to a Patreon episode near you.
It's also got a whole host of D&D 5e ones that he's written as well, other than his own. Well, he, not.
Yeah, what was the one that he mentioned that he wrote? Oh.
Has escaped me as well.
Oh, there was something there was a cool set. Oh, it was the Macbeth. That was, he said that was the first one that he did.
Murder Mystery in the Feywild.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know how you guys get on with murder mysteries.
Yeah, that's true.
But it would be, there is heist.
I'd like to give another one a go as well.
There's a heist on a floating casino.
For another year.
It took you an episode to sit at a table.
Hey, that was the older, not the newest, the new modernist.
I won't trap him this time. And then I
promise you won't attempt to destroy a perfect lie detecting device.
That would be too easy.
That I can't promise, but if you give us another very exact replica of Trevor, I promise I won't do that.
I think
this is why this is like you were saying, Alex, about the testimony to Tim's sort of genius with the game creation is the fact that you've just gone, and Tom's given us the idea of which would be your favourite game, and all of us have basically gone, here's actually a variety of different games. None of us have gone all the same game. It's not one appeal for everyone. It's here's an appeal for this group, here's an appeal for this group, but it's all within that collective group of TTRPG lovers. So he's found that sweet spot of going, this is my audience, this is the people that want to be playing these games. And actually then within that group, it's not just people who want to play tabletop RPG games. It's people who want to play this setting of game and with this kind of style of mechanics and this setting of game and this style of mechanics. And he's really found a cool mixture across all of his games.
Yeah,
absolutely. For to please everyone. So we probably will end up playing them all.
A lot with what he said was, especially the advice for budding game designers out there, is that go with your idea. It doesn't have to be so crazy and out there. There are approximately 8 billion people on the planet. There's going to be someone who's into the same stuff as you. Just go for it, which I thought was fantastic. And that could be for anything, not just designing a TTRPG, but all sorts.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, 100%. And also this idea of like, just write.
Sometimes left, but always right.
Sometimes left, but always right.
Sorry, that was a cheap one, aren't I?
But just write whenever you have the chance. And that whole idea of like, everybody has loads of amazing ideas, but the difference between that and being a writer is that you just recognize when you've got an idea and you're like, I'm just going to note it down very quickly, you know?
Well, gents, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, all of you.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you ever so much to Tim for taking the time to talk to James. And thank you so much for listening and for all of your Patreon-style sized chewy chunk support. So, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Love you, bye.
And thank you very much for listening to Roll Britannia Parlay.
Look out for the next episode of Parlay. But if you simply can't wait to hear more from the crew of Roll Britannia, then you can find us on all good podcatchers out there where we have new episodes coming out every Wednesday. There are over 200 episodes in the series so far, but there's plenty for you to listen to. Not only that, but you can also check out our Patreon, our merch store, and even drop into our very active Discord server. All the links are in the episode description.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Do you want bonus audio?
I think what we've done all day, by the way, guys, is yes and, yes and, yes and now we're just, why?
A cow's life begins, like many of us, as an egg. Squeezed out seemingly at random by the gentle grazer, the cow seems unbothered by its brown offspring.
I had the murder wall. I was trying to figure it out on my kitchen wall with names, post-its, string, and the lot.
Is that brother Pratt?
I don't know how to do things with my mind.
You've got to find a way to do this. I know it's inside you. You're a silver bow.
Come give it to me, buddy boy.
Okay.
And as he approaches me, I'd like to twist his nipples.
I can tell you for definite exactly where the inspiration for Nancy came from.
Go on.
Careful, just swallow it all.
Like a good boy. And
if he does get sliced by the glass, he'll just try and
start it out.
Like. Yeah.
Well, join the Royal Britannia Patreon. Available now.